Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's National Immigration Forum call on a new national security paper. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. I will be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Ali Noorani with the National Immigration Forum. Please go ahead.
Hey, thank you. Good morning, all. My name is Ali Noorani. I'm the president and CEO of the National Immigration Forum, and I really want to thank you for taking a little time this Friday morning to discuss a new report that is being released today speaking to the national security rationale for lifting the travel ban. This is the second in a series of reports that Elizabeth Newman, the forum's advisor on national security issues, has published. Last year, and just before the holidays, we released a report looking at the refugee resettlement ceiling cap and the refugee resettlement program overall. And again, and really, and Elizabeth spoke to, again, the national security rationale for lifting the refugee resettlement ceiling. So this morning, we're going to be doing is focusing on the travel ban. And, you know, we're about 4 or 5 days away from day one of the Biden administration, and it is widely expected that lifting of the travel ban will be one of the first executive orders by President Biden when he comes into office. So today's conversation is really important because we want to try to offer a different perspective of why lifting the travel ban is so important in terms of the nation's security. And we have two incredible speakers today. First is the author of the report, Elizabeth Newman. She served as Assistant Secretary of Counterterrorism and Threat Prevention at the Department of Homeland Security under the Trump administration. And she's had several national security roles dating back to the Bush administration. Our second speaker is Ryan Crocker, who is the non-resident senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Ryan served as U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Syria, Kuwait, and Lebanon. So he brings an incredible wealth of real-life experience in terms of serving in countries around the world, but also really looking at these issues from a national security perspective. So we're really grateful for Elizabeth and Ryan spending some time with us this morning and for Elizabeth taking the time to write this report. So let's get started, and let me turn it over to Elizabeth Newman. Go ahead. Thank you.
Thanks, Ali. It has just been such an honor to be able to work with the National Immigration Forum and work on these important issues that sadly I think the Trump administration got gravely wrong. And having seen the efforts up close and personal, I came to the conclusion that the administration used the justification of security as a cloak to hide other intentions that tended to be more along the lines of basically putting out the no vacancy sign, the you are not welcome sign, and really a cloak for xenophobic and racist action. When you dig into the security issues, which I have attempted to do in this paper to the extent that we can talk about it publicly in the non-classified realm, there really isn't a justification for countrywide bans. And I also lay out the case that the security systems that have been in place over a number of years and have over, now 2 decades been making improvements have reached the point where not that there isn't room for growth, and I absolutely encourage that in the Biden administration, but there has been enough strengthening that there is no need for a blanket ban on people of a certain nationality. So I'm very grateful that President-elect Biden has indicated he's going to rescind both the travel and the refugee bans. it's the right call for national security. These bans damaged our nation's reputation. They were an unnecessary distraction from the actual security enhancements that were needed. And the Biden administration should consider how to take advantage of certain security enhancements that did accompany the travel ban. I actually, during my tenure, gave testimony in September 2019 about the travel ban, which is was kind of a very difficult hearing to go through because I disagreed with so many of the arguments about why they made the travel ban. But the one thing that, and I, of course, was not going to lie under oath, but what you'll notice in my testimony was that what I was emphasizing are things that I do think are beneficial to security that came out of that process. And those were some standards around identity management and information sharing that allow us to evaluate whether a country is really meeting, a baseline set of standards in order to ensure that individuals coming from that country are who they say they are and don't pose a national security risk to our country. And so what I would encourage the Biden administration to do is, yes, rescind the ban, but take a look at some of those assessments that have been done, the tools that have been created, and use some of our traditional tools of diplomacy to encourage countries to continue to strengthen their own standards around information management or information sharing and identity management. I think that we can do that without travel restrictions. A lot of the work that needs to be done in many of the countries that received a ban or were on the cusp of receiving the ban have to do with basic IT management. These are countries that are just coming into the modern world. Some of them don't even have credit card systems. I recall one ambassador explaining to me, you have to view this particular country as in the 1960s in terms of their technology. So what we might be asking them to do is just not possible because the underlying infrastructure is not there. But where the United States can help along with our partners is to help those countries achieve that baseline level of connectivity so that they can participate in some of these global security standards. So I think there are a little bit of good that can be gleaned from a whole lot of bad that happened in the Trump administration, and I hope they take a good look at that. But I'll circle back to the main point of this paper, which is we need to rescind the travel and refugee bans. They greatly damaged our nation's reputation, and the only way to begin repairing it is to immediately denounce it. It gives us the opportunity to regain the moral high ground, and we can leverage some of the knowledge and the tools we gleaned from this experiment, but we can do it in a way that doesn't punish countries, but helps them achieve a baseline worldwide security standard. So I want to thank again the National Immigration Forum for giving me the opportunity to explore these issues and make recommendations. And I feel very confident that the Biden administration will be able to help begin to restore our standing in the world and repairing some of the damage that occurred during the Trump administration.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Let's turn now to Ryan Cropper. Go ahead, Ryan.
Thanks, Ali, and very pleased to be on the program. The Trump administration has damaged America's national security in a number of ways, not just one or two. This is particularly egregious. Whatever window dressing the administration sought to put on it, it is seen universally around the world as what it is, an anti-Muslim directive. That has damaged us greatly. In the early days of the administration, when the first version of this came out, Jim Mattis, of course, the new Secretary of Defense, he was prepared to resign over the original draft, which included Iraq. Why? Because we were engaged at that moment in a street-by-street campaign against Islamic State up in northern Iraq, city of Mosul, advising and assisting Iraqi military and special forces. So, you know, if you're in the middle of a war and the President of the United States issues a proclamation banning you and all your fellow citizens from traveling to the United States, you're probably not going to be looking at your military partners in the same way. So this is real security. It is real world, and it is really dangerous. We have a history of this, sadly, the Chinese Exclusion Act, the internment of Americans of Japanese descent in World War II, and we've got this. Elizabeth has outlined exactly the right way to go, which is to work with countries, regardless of the religious faith of their populations, to put in place the kinds of controls that ensure that no bad actors can find tools out there to get themselves into the United States or other places where they can do damage. Trying to do that kind of work with the Muslim travel ban in place is somewhere between hard and impossible. So, you know, there are real threats. There are real security issues. And hopefully, when we're a week from now, we will be seeing the beginning through the adoption of Elizabeth's work by the Biden administration. We're going to see a different playing field out there in the Middle East and elsewhere, and one in which our national security is substantially enhanced, not degraded.
Thank you so much, Ryan, and thank you again, Elizabeth. Operator, if we could provide the instructions for questions from press, and then I know I've got a one or two kind of questions for folks while we're waiting for things to queue up.
Absolutely. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. And once again, for your questions today, that is star and one. We'll pause a moment to allow any questions to queue.
Great, thank you. And I should mention to press that the report is available on our website homepage, immigrationforum.org, and of course we'll be sending it out with a follow-up statement. So I think we've got our first question queued up, operator.
And once again, that is star and one. And we'll move first to Julia Preston with the Marshall Project. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for holding this call. I believe one of the countries currently on the list is North Korea. I'm wondering how you would foresee working with North Korea on the types of standards that you would like to put in place in lieu of the general ban, and how you see the particular case of North Korea in this context. And secondly, I also wonder how you are envisioning coordinating the end of the ban with travel restrictions that might be in place because of COVID-19.
Ali, did you want me to take that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go for it.
Julia, those are both excellent questions, and I think it's important to clarify that there were travel restrictions in place before the Trump administration, and there are ways in which, even without a 212F travel restriction, that the U.S. and its screening and vetting capabilities determines whether people from certain countries that do pose a, from a national perspective, pose a risk. What this paper does not necessarily contemplate going country by country and saying, so what you should do for North Korea is X. But I think that from a national security perspective, there are very well-warranted reasons to consider how you would handle nationals from certain countries. And indeed, there are statutes on the books for nationalities, for individuals of certain nationalities in terms of how we have to screen them, how we have to vet them. So taking away the Trump travel ban does not necessarily remove any of those other screening and vetting protocols. And as you point out, there is some merit for certain types of nationality-based travel restrictions when you have, you know, countries posing a certain type of threat. But even in those instances, I'm sure you're aware, but just to make sure everybody's on the same page, there are always exceptions that can be granted through State Department Consular Affairs has the ability to grant exceptions. Often those exceptions might be the classic case, the UN, the fact that you have individuals coming into the United States to go to the UN General Assembly, exceptions or waivers are granted for the representatives to come to the United States to attend the UN General Assembly. So there are mechanisms in place to make sure that you know, who doesn't need to be in the country occurs, and then as well to make sure that there are waivers for you know, diplomatic and humanitarian purposes. On your second question, actually, I didn't write that, jot that one down. Can you remind me again what the second question was?
In essence, kind of how lifting the ban in the context of COVID-19 restrictions.
Excellent. So the COVID-19 bans are separate instruments, and you've seen from the Biden administration some signals that they may leave some of those in place because of the difficulty in figuring out the right way to begin reopening the country to travel, particularly in this moment where you have additional strains of the virus. You know, we now have the requirement by the CDC that if you're getting on a plane and flying to the United States, you have to have a negative test before you get on the plane. So there are absolutely some complex factors when it comes to COVID-19. A lot of the travel restrictions associated to COVID-19 do leverage public health authorities, which is it's a different part of the law than the 212F actions that are associated with the Muslim ban, with the refugee ban. So I believe that the administration can't, and I'm not an immigration attorney, so I want to clarify that, but it is my understanding that they can remove the president's proclamations, the president's executive orders that put those bans in place, and your COVID restrictions might still remain. But that's it will be interesting to see how the Biden administration chooses to handle that. I would imagine they probably will use some caution in reopening to make sure that we don't make the pandemic worse.
I would just add to that, this is Ryan, that the restrictions on North Korea are not seen as anti-Asian or anti-Korean, even, because they're not. So again, as Elizabeth laid out, we do have restrictions in place. This one, for example, would be for all the right reasons and for none of the wrong ones.
Great, thank you both. Can we get the next question, please?
Absolutely. We'll move next to Mika Rosenberg with Reuters. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my question. I was wondering about, you know, if the travel bans themselves are listed, but the sort of the vetting, the increased vetting that was put in place under Trump stays in place, you know, the sort of quote-unquote extreme vetting, if that, you know, if there are other changes that can be done behind the scenes to, like, reduce bottlenecks in that process, you know, that, like, some of the applications being held up in FBI review and or sort of a lot of applications just sort of held in limbo, you know, without any information about what's happening to them. And then, you know, similarly with some of the security advisory opinions that are holding up applications for refugees. So if there's any kind of suggestions or recommendations for, you know, changing that vetting process, or do you think that that is going to stay the same?
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Great question. And I spent more time in the refugee paper that was released in December kind of talking about the importance of vetting. So the way I would describe what the Trump administration did as it pertains to extreme vetting is that they were taking the logical next step that had already been pre-planned in the Obama administration to continue our information sharing efforts that were called for under the 9/11 Commission, meaning that when you look under the hood of what extreme vetting actually is, it is absolutely something that would have been done under a Clinton administration or some other Republican administration. Most of this is publicly, all of this actually is publicly available online, but you're basically taking, the adjudicator, which in the case of a refugee would be like USCIS. They have the information that was put on the application, and they are giving it to the thing called the National Vetting Center, who serves as this middleman to compare low-side unclassified information with high-side classified holdings. So they are serving almost as like an IT function to compare those holdings and then returning the appropriate information at the appropriate classification level back to the adjudicator so the adjudicator can make a determination about admissibility. I think most Americans assume that we were able to do that a long time ago. But in large part, USCIS has been very paper-based. They are in the middle of a modernization project that should speed up a number of their processes, and I think that holds some great potential for the future of being able to process refugees as well as other individuals seeking immigration benefits. In the refugee paper, I cite a study that was done, a very in-depth look at what needs to happen at USCIS in order to support a higher refugee ceiling. And they go into, this was put out by the Penn Biden Center, and I believe it was released the last week of October. The full citation is referenced in the refugee paper if you're interested in it. But they look at this very much from like a digital modernization effort to, you know, recognizing some of the perils that USCIS is under because they have they're fee-based and we're not processing anybody right now because of COVID. So all of their funding has dried up, and how are you going to scale to 125,000 from 15,000 when you don't have any fee funds to even pay your people and your IT projects have had to been put on pause? They go into a lot of really great detail and recommendations about how we need to help USCIS modernize and fix, you know, what might be sound really boring, but is really necessary to scale to be able to process that many people. Now that has little to do with security vetting, but it actually will speed up a lot of the process that people have to go through. And on the security vetting side, once USCIS has an IT modernized IT, it allows for electronic comparisons that are currently done by hand, which is kind of mind-blowing to me, but that electronic comparison should allow for a lot of things that, as you referenced, get caught up in manual checks, and you referenced the FBI and security advisory opinions. In the refugee paper, I argue that the Biden administration should relook. In fact, it is my understanding the community is already looking at what aspects of those manual security checks can go away because the National Vetting Center is operating. And I would encourage them to expedite that very, very quickly so that we can get rid of the old system and rely on the new modernized system that does most things electronically, and where things are flagged, you know, you have a human interact and look at it and dig into it. But it should, I would expect in the next 2 to 3 years, you would see a dramatic increase in the processing time and less indications of people, awaiting their security checks. And I've also laid out in the refugee paper one of the challenges when people just end up in security check limbo, which is the case for many, particularly because of the Trump administration's focus on certain nationalities. The challenge is that people are just waiting for an answer. And if the answer is going to be no, we just need to tell people that so that they can move on with their lives and find other alternatives for where they could be resettled or where they can make their home. Leaving people in limbo really, feeds a lot of vulnerability and grievance that other bad actors can prey upon. So it's really important that we make those security checks go so much faster than they currently do. But the main point I hope everyone takes away when we talk about vetting has been improved. It's been improving since 9/11. There were dramatic improvements put into place after 2009. There are still things I think that we can do better as a country, and improving the way that we do watch listing and making sure that we're not sweeping up people that shouldn't be watch listed, for example. But by and large, what the Trump administration did related to vetting in and of itself was not that extreme, because it was kind of the natural next step for information sharing in the national security community.
I would just jump in on that last point. Just as is the case with the Muslim travel ban, it goes to the question of intent. What does the administration intend? And in the case of security vetting and clearances, the intent was to simply slow roll the process, to delay it. And nowhere has this been more egregious and more damaging than with interpreters, largely, who made our missions possible in places like Afghanistan and Iraq. I'm on the board of a group called No One Left Behind, dedicated to bringing those who risked their lives to help us and whose lives are at risk now because they did help us, to bring them to the U.S. And that is all being slow-rolled by an administration who doesn't really care what service they performed. These are undesirable people because they're not quite like us. So, again, with the Biden administration, and so well-informed by Elizabeth, it's going to be important to get the resources in place to make very valid screening processes work and work rapidly. Because right now, it's just been a slow roll. That was the intention.
And you're absolutely right. I sat in meetings where it was really, really obvious that people were intentionally slow rolling. I found it maddening. But I do think that can be easily fixed by the Biden team sending the right signal.
And I think we have one final question here. If we can cue that up, please.
Absolutely. We'll take our last question from Michelle Hackman from Wall Street Journal. Please go ahead.
Hi, all. My question was actually pretty thoroughly just answered, so I don't want to waste everyone's time by asking a similar version, but I really do appreciate you guys doing this call. I guess I would quickly ask, do we have a positive indication that this will indeed be rescinded on day one or close to day one?
Elizabeth Ryan, do you want to speak to that at all?
Elizabeth is a better place.
I was just going to say, I haven't heard anything to indicate they won't. They have a lot on their plate on day one, so certainly, if we see violent attacks over the next few days, I could see that getting, pushed a little bit, but the indications I've heard from people that were part of the transition team is that it's still the intention. I'm going to be watching closely to see how they do it, if they can, if they're just going to wipe it all out and then start from scratch, or if they're going to rescind certain pieces, because the executive order that the travel ban is associated with had a number of sections. Some of those sections are not nearly as perverse as the travel ban is. So, and some are. So it'll be interesting to see how they choose to do the rescissions and if there's anything they keep in place.
Any last words, Ryan?
And no, we're all going to be watching. The world is going to be watching. And the folks in the Biden administration, the key appointments that have already been announced, these are folks who know how the world works and how we need to work in the world. So I would echo Elizabeth. I'm quite confident that we will see these measures addressed very early on, precisely because the policies and the implementation of those policies by the Trump administration has, over these last 4 years, constituted a very grave threat to America's national security.
I really want to thank.
I was just going to add on to what the ambassador was saying, that you know, a person to watch is Russ Travers was announced this week as the Deputy Homeland Security Advisor. He was previously the acting director of the National Counterterrorism Center, which is instrumental in a lot of our screening and vetting and watchlisting efforts over the last 20 years. He has tremendous knowledge about what is working, what is not, and you know, some of the key gaps that we need to continue to work to close. And he was in many of the early conversations where there was a lot of pushback in the way from cabinet members in the way that the administration was trying to advance their agenda, the travel ban agenda, and other things. So he's intimately aware of all of the things that were done, the little bit of good that came out of it, and certainly a whole lot of the damage that has been caused. So I think he will be tremendously helpful for the Biden team to be able to get started day one on fixing these problems.
Well, I want to repeat that the paper is available at our website, immigrationforum.org. And, you know, it's been kind of very interesting listening to this conversation, because the series of reports is titled Insider Perspectives, National Security and Immigration. And I think today we've had two of the preeminent experts on these issues join us. So I really want to thank Elizabeth Neumann, National Security Advisor to the National Immigration Forum, but also the former Assistant Secretary of Counterterrorism and Threat Prevention at DHS under the Trump administration. And I really want to thank Ryan Crocker, non-resident senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and the former U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Syria, Kuwait, and Lebanon. Again, thank you very much. We will have a statement out soon. If you would like to follow up with Elizabeth or Ryan for follow-up questions, please let us know and we will put you in touch. Have a good weekend and stay safe, everyone.